Hello, and welcome back to the Health Services Division podcast series. Today I have some special guests from Encore Rehabilitation, and we are going to be discussing sort of the regulatory environment as it relates to rehab in the SNF industry. So from Encore Healthcare, I have Sean Halsick and Colleen Jones. I'm your host today, Meredith Mall, the Director of Rehabilitation Standards. So Sean, do you want to go ahead and provide a little bit of background on yourself?
Absolutely. Thank you, Meredith. So my name is Sean Halsick. I am the Corporate Compliance Officer for Encore and PT by background, 21 years in the industry in all areas of provider types, but for the last 10 years have really been on the compliance side, regulatory side of things, spending 4 years on the government side of things, working for a program safeguard contractor, which are now known as ZPICs, was brought in because of the significant therapy fraud scheme that was going on in Detroit, Michigan. 6 years ago, came back to the provider side, working on setting up compliance programs for providers that really take a proactive rather than reactive approach to compliance.
Fantastic. Welcome, and thanks for joining us today. And then we have Colleen Jones. Colleen, do you want to give a brief background on yourself and also on Encore Rehabilitation?
Sure. My name is Colleen Jones. I am a Division Vice President for Encore Rehabilitation. I am a speech pathologist by training. I've been doing this skilled nursing facility rehab management for about 25 years. Representing Encore today, Sean and I wanted you to be aware that Encore is a company that's been in business for about a decade, headquartered in Farmington Hills, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit. We have about 10,000 employees nationwide, and we do business with 19 of the CCRC, ALIL, communities with LCS. We do that with our traditional model. We do that with the rehab agencies, and we do that with direct, what we call PTIP, which is where we have the individual provider number in various states. So my role with the company is I'm the main liaison between Encore and LCS.
Fantastic. So I'm really excited to have both of you as guests on our podcast today talking about kind of the rehab regulatory environment because you all bring so much knowledge to the conversation. And so I want to provide our listeners kind of some high-level overview of some really important things that are going on currently as it relates to alternative payment models. We have been providing conferences for our field staff for about 6 months, and this information is constantly evolving and changing, right? So what we know currently was not the same information as 6 months ago. So I want to talk a little bit today and just kind of get your feedback and knowledge about what's happening specifically with Part A PPS reform. Let's talk a little bit about the Part B misvalued cost list as it relates to some of those treatment codes and what it means to our communities. And then let's jump over to some of the key points that I don't think we maybe have been paying attention to as it relates to the Impact Act when we're out educating our leaders on what they need to be paying attention to and what they need to be doing. So I want to start first with the Part A PPS reform, because I know this is a really hot topic. We've had very recently, as of a couple weeks ago, the technical expert panel research that was released. And we also have this CMMI or the Innovation Center kind of also working on an episodic payment model. So Sean, can you tell me if we just needed to summarize this for our leadership, what would you want them to know about this PPS reform research from the technical expert panel?
Sure. So CMS contracted with Acumen to really look at past data, look at that data and look at what is a potential change in the payment model for SNF PPS, focusing on going from what we will see as a unified theme as we talk about all these payment reforms today, focusing on going from a model that rewards volume to a model that's going to reward value. So that's the big focus within this model, was to take the amount of therapy that's being delivered out of what is impacting the payment. So under the current model, we sort of have three buckets that come into determining payment. Therapy bucket is really the big bucket, looking at how much therapy and what rug level. Under this new model, the amount of therapy would not impact that payment. Instead, they'd be looking at five different buckets. PT and OT would have a bucket. Speech would have a bucket. Non-therapy ancillary would have a bucket, which is a very big change in this, and this is something that multiple organizations, including MedPAC, have really looked at, because the SNFs historically have not been reimbursed well or in accordance for what they do on some of those higher complex medical patients that maybe have very expensive drugs, other types of care. So this model would give additional payment based on that. So that's a big positive in this model. Mm-hmm. And then you have the nursing component, and then you have the normal sort of room and board component. So the big thing is volume of therapy is not going to matter. We still have to provide therapy. We still need to have the outcomes, but that payment is going to be determined really by those five factors. PT and OT specifically within that bucket, they're going to look at what was the diagnosis from the hospital, what is the functional level of the patient, and is there a cognition issue? And it'll determine potentially 30 different levels where that patient falls in. Speech, accordingly, will have 12 different levels under what they've so far proposed, what we've seen in the slides. Now, that, of course, is subject to change. We don't know, you know, absolute yet what that model will be, but this is so far. Yeah, this is so far what they've put out, and CMS is being very transparent about that with giving us those details on their website.
Right. So the research really talks about the shift from volume to value, right? So they're trying to come up with this model that's based on patient characteristics and comorbidities and kind of balance of cost, you know? So all of these buckets that you've talked about, you know, it differs per patient. Some patients may have more costs in a particular bucket than others, and those costs may be higher or lower at certain points along the path of the length of stay, right? So,
correct.
Is the general consensus from this research and from the slides that have come out from this panel that therapy payments, as you know, if it's outside of some sort of extensive stay or there's, you know, a really medically complex, the kind of your routine therapy payment would be somewhat less or less in general than what we see today?
It does seem that way with what they're proposing. I think what you're going to see is a little bump in payment in some of those medically more complex patients, which we haven't had in the past. But I would say probably your typical orthopedic patient, that type of patient, expect to see that payment drop a little bit.
Okay. And then we have the kind of in contrast to, and not necessarily in contrast, but almost in unison with what MedPAC has poised CMS to do, and then them subsequently hiring Acumen and enlisting this technical expert panel to come up with this plan. But we've also got the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation Center, or CMMI, that came out of the Affordable Care Act. And what is this group charged with doing? Is it kind of in conjunction with what Acumen is doing, or is this something separate as it relates to payment reform?
Right. So what you're seeing coming out of the Innovation Center is, this is where we're seeing bundles, episodic payments. They, again, are looking at these alternative payment model types. So what I would potentially foresee is, you know, currently under the joint replacement model, we are still being paid in the SNF as a PPS provider with the current payment model, and that payment then comes into that episode. So what you're going to, I think, see is an overarching payment model happen across post-acute care with episodic or bundles, and then those individual payment models for each of the post-acute care providers. But they really are looking at that post-acute care continuum as a whole and looking at, you know, are we having the right patient in the right setting at the right time? Are we making good care transitions that are safe, knowing what the next downstream provider has as sort of their criteria for what they can take as a patient? So I think we'll see sort of these overarching episodic payments, and then the SNF PPS reform will fit into that, just like what we're seeing with some of the ideas currently coming out of MedPAC, and then what the Secretary of HHS is going to be tasked with as well from the IMPACT Act.
Absolutely. I think it's going to be very interesting. I know we had a conversation recently with the NASL organization and their public policy expert on whether CMMI will even remain in existence once there's new administration. So very, very interesting, but lots going on. So let me ask you, Colleen, what do you think this overall PPS reform, this whole episodic or bundled payment type kind of a model is going to look like from an operations perspective, especially as it relates to SNF and therapy?
I think that if you keep up with some of these proposals as it relates to overall reform, the commonly used phrase is the train has left the station. Mm-hmm. We know that there's a mini PPS or a different form of what we experienced when we went from cost-based to PPS. We think that the overall changes will be as impacting. We think that there will be less therapy happening in skilled nursing facilities. But the one thing that we know is that patients continue to age, live longer, and need these ancillary services. Where they get it is going to change. Probably how much they get is going to change. So we will have to revamp our staffing models in the skilled nursing sector. And I think a wise, a smart strategy would be to find out who the hospital's preferred home health agencies are. In a lot of markets, that'll be the Health at Home connection that is servicing the LCS, AL, and IL communities, or rental properties, if you will. And I think that there'll be a lot more therapy happening with those home health agencies, as these patients who, if they need the care now, they're still going to need care, but where they get it is going to change. So I think we'll be doing more therapy with home health agencies and less therapy in the skilled nursing, inside the walls of the skilled nursing facility.
And that's a very interesting perspective, because I know that that's what our health services division has been gearing our leadership for, is how we are managing and care coordinating the patients that we're receiving inside of our health centers that are coming from the hospital, and what our length of stay starts to look like as we start to get more bundled payment type patients that we know, and we know that healthcare reform is pushing patients into the least intensive setting to receive some of the services or most of the services that they may be used to receive in our health center. So I know that it's almost a matter of when. It's not almost even the how anymore. It's just when this is actually going to happen, if it's not happened already. So that's very interesting point. I want to switch gears a little bit to Part B. So we've talked a lot about Part A reform, and I know that's the hot topic. And Part B, I think, is still from an alternative payment model or reform model, is still not very well defined for our particular operation as it relates to outpatient in the SNF, right? So our campuses where we're doing outpatient treatment on our assisted living and independent, or all our long-term residents in the SNF as it relates to MACRA. But let's talk a little bit about what we do know. And Sean, maybe you can talk to me a little bit about the misvalued list and exactly what that is and why it would be important for our leaders and our communities to pay attention to that.
Mm-hmm. So for the last several years, CMS, when they've put out proposed and final rules, has identified a list of CPT codes that they consider to be potentially misvalued. And it's a list of, I think, about 80 codes currently, but 10 of those codes are the common codes that we use in therapy services. And up until this point, there has been a work group that was working at the AMA CPT and potentially coming up with a different way to bill therapy, looking at maybe more of a per visit code versus what we have now. And unfortunately, what happened is that that work group couldn't really come to a consensus. So it did come to a consensus on the new eval codes that we're going to see January 1, but they couldn't come to a consensus on the intervention codes. So that's put those intervention codes back into the radar, essentially, of CMS. We've sort of been able to hold CMS off saying, nope, we're working on it, we're working on it, we're gonna come up with a better plan here. But now that we haven't been able to do that, those codes, again, it's 10. For example, therapeutic exercise, CPT code 97110, it's number 3 on the list of 80. So we know that what's happening now is a group professionally, the professional organizations have gone out, they are surveying their members to say, what do you think the value of these codes are? Then they will take that in the spring, that'll go in front of the RUC, who's the group that assigns the value, and from there it will go to CMS. So we know coming up here in 2017 there is going to be significant work done on those codes. We expect to see new values assigned to those codes for payment within 2018.
Got it. So as it relates to the evaluation codes, Colleen, there is, you know, if I'm a business office manager or an executive director or a SNF administrator, those codes from a financial perspective or a reimbursement perspective are not poised to change in January, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And then but these CPT codes that are treatment codes, if they could be eliminated or maybe their reimbursement could be changed, that is something that as an administrator, I would want to be paying attention to as it relates to industry news, for example. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, because the way most of your therapy partners charge you, I'm assuming almost all, would be a portion of those CPT codes. So if some of those codes go away or those codes are cut from a reimbursement standpoint, it ultimately impacts both LCS as well as your therapy provider.
Got it. So it's not necessarily a budget neutral sort of endeavor. This is something that could not only affect the reimbursement that our communities would receive, but it also potentially could affect the modalities that our therapists are able to deliver to patients and residents that are in accordance with their needs from a medical necessity standpoint. Is that an accurate statement?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I mean, at this point, we don't expect the codes themselves to change. It's really going to be the payment value.
It's going to be the payment value. Good deal. Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
Yep.
So let's just switch gears really quick to the Impact Act. We've done a lot of education to our leadership about the technical pieces of it, right? So here's what the law requires you to do. Here's exactly how, from a procedural perspective, we think you should capture the admission and discharge data. Here's what is required to be placed on the MDS. But I know that we've had some conversation about some of the key points that we're missing in our messaging and education as it relates to the Impact Act. So can you talk maybe about two of those key points, Sean, that our leadership and administration probably need to be aware of?
Absolutely. I agree with you. I think so far with the Impact Act, what we've really focused on is what do we need to know operationally with standardized data on the MDS and then standardized quality measures. But the two of the very key things that were part of the Impact Act is it tasked MedPAC with looking at and identifying a potential unified payment system for post-acute care. And they have already done that. They have had several reports that have gone back, and what they have come up with is essentially an episodic payment model. In addition, it tasks the Secretary of HHS to do the same, come up with an alternative payment model for post-acute care. And there's a little bit of a longer timeline for the Secretary of HHS on that. So MedPAC's essentially done. Secretary of HHS has until 2018 just to collect the data to be able to then look at what is that potential different payment model for all of post-acute care. So that's where it's going to be really key as we're doing Section GG. That's going to be some of those data components. As we're doing some of those quality measures, those will be those data components. So really, everything is leaning toward, as Colleen said, the train has left the station. Everything is looking down the road at what is that new payment model going to be across post-acute care.
Got it. So to simplify this, I think for our field staff and for our leadership, because I know that we often get feedback that it's just so confusing. There's so many different things going on, and we're not sure sometimes if the left hand knows what the right is doing in regards to keeping up with all of these regulations. So MedPAC has charged CMS with PPS payment reform, and it originally was, hey, you all need to revise the therapy piece. We don't like the way therapy it is reimbursed in this sector of healthcare that's then morphed into the entire breadth of PPS, right? So you've Correct. Got CMS who hired Acumen to really focus on Medicare Part A PPS reform, but then you have the Impact Act over here and the Secretary of Health and Human Services who's charged with really reform outside of PPS and across the different silos of healthcare, so from post-acute care, particularly LTAC and IRF and SNF and home health and things of that nature. Is that an accurate kind of summation of the two different things kind of going on here?
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. I think we'll have reform within the individual silos, but they're ultimately going to feed up into that big, more post-acute care model, again, where I think the focus is right patient, right setting, right time.
Right. And so I think the challenge for Acumen and CMS is really taking this PPS payment reform and also adding components of SNF value-based purchasing, right, or the Impact Act right. with Section GG and getting all of these different regs to kind of make sense under a payment reform, you know, all of the things that we're tracking and looking at and you know, could potentially take penalties on from a reimbursement perspective. It's quite the challenge.
Absolutely.
Well, ladies, listen, this has been very, very informative. This is great information for our leaders to listen to. I really want to thank you for your time and your expertise, and we hope to have you all again on one of our future podcasts.
Legal disclaimer. LifeCare Services LLC is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.